Now Saul heard that David and his men had been discovered. And Saul, spear in hand, was seated under the tamarisk tree on the hill at Gibeah, with all his officials standing round him. Saul said to them, "Listen, men of Benjamin, will the son of Jesse give all of you fields and vineyards? Will he make all of you commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds? Is that why you have all conspired against me? No one tells me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse. None of you is concerned about me or tells me that my son has incited my servant to lie in wait for me, as he does today." But Doeg, the Edomite, who was standing with Saul's officials, said, "I saw the son of Jesse come to Ahimelech, son of Ahitub, at Nob. Ahimelech inquired of the Lord for him. He also gave him provisions and the sword of Goliath, the Philistine." Then the king sent for the priest Ahimelech, son of Ahitub, and his father's whole family, who were the priests at Nob. And they all came to the king. Saul said, "Listen now, son of Ahitub." "Yes, my lord," he answered. Saul said to him, "Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, giving him bread and a sword and inquiring of God for him, so that he has rebelled against me and lies in wait for me as he does today?" Ahimelech answered the king, "Who of all your servants is as loyal as David, the king's son-in-law, captain of your bodyguard, and highly respected in your household? Was that day the first time I inquired of God for him? Of course not. Let not the king accuse your servant or any of his father's family, for your servant knows nothing at all about this whole affair." But the king said, "You shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and your father's whole family." Then the king ordered the guards at his side, "Turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because they too have sided with David. They knew he was fleeing, yet they did not tell me." But the king's officials were not willing to raise a hand to strike the priests of the Lord. The king then ordered Doeg, "You turn and strike down the priests." So Doeg the Edomite turned and struck them down. That day he killed 85 men who wore the linen ephod. He also put to the sword Nob, the town of the priests, with its men and women, its children and infants, and its cattle, donkeys, and sheep. But Abiathar, son of Ahimelech, son of Ahitub, escaped and fled to join David. He told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. Then David said to Abiathar, "That day, when Doeg the Edomite was there, I knew he would be sure to tell Saul, 'I am responsible for the death of your father's whole family. Stay with me. Don't be afraid. The man who is seeking your life is seeking mine also. You will be safe with me.'"
Right. So just for getting to 1 Samuel 22, let's have a little recap of what happened in 1 Samuel 21, just to remind you, a whole week ago, it's been a busy week. But, So 1 Samuel 21, we read about how David had to flee from Saul. There's that encounter with Jonathan where Jonathan says, "No, Saul's going to kill you," so David has to flee. And he goes on his own. He's got nothing with him. He's taken no food, no provisions, no men with him, no weaponry. And he comes to the priests of Nob. So Nob is a village or a town where there is a priest there, and there's a whole family of priests, as we'll read later. And David says to the priest of Nob, Abiathar, he says, "You know, give me some help. I come away on a secret mission that, you know, in a real rush, I need help." So Abiathar gives David the food, gives the bread from the altar to eat for food. And David says, "Have you got any weapons?" The only weapon they've got there is Goliath's sword, which has been stored behind the altar. So David says, "That's great, I'll take the weapon." And David takes Goliath's sword and goes to Gad, which sounds like a daft thing to do because Gad was where Goliath came from. So David turns up, clutching Goliath's sword, isn't going to go down well. And David has to pretend to be mad in order not to be thrown into prison or captured as a prisoner of war. So David has to flee from Gad and he ends up in a cave. And we might imagine that was a pretty low point in David's life. As we sung earlier, that was a trial in David's life. Why did God allow that trial? not to punish David, not to make him feel small, but to help him to rely on God and to learn to rely on God. And we'll see how that pans out in the next few chapters. He ends up in the cave, and then finally, in the beginning of chapter 22, we read how David and his men, he's got 400 people, men with him now, they move to the forest of Hereth. And this is not scriptural, so don't take this as my word for this, but I always imagine that as kind of like a Robin Hood situation. He's in the forest with his merry men. They're probably not waylaying people and giving to taking the rich, give to the poor, but that's kind of that existence where they are hiding. We're not told how they got food. Obviously, there were people in the kingdom that were supporting them and helping them, but they're hiding in the forest away from Saul. So now, let's pick up the passage in 1 Samuel 22, verse 6. Now, Saul heard that David and his men had been discovered. No. Okay, we've lost. There we go, that's fine. Yep. Saul heard that David and his men had been discovered, and Saul was seated, spear in hand, under a tamarisk tree on the hill at Gibeah. So there's the picture here of Saul. Now, verse 6, up to this point, as far as Saul is concerned, you know, it's good. Saul's doing the right things. He's not gone wrong in this chapter yet. Won't take long, but he hasn't done yet. So Saul is sitting, and there's this image of Saul. He's on a hilltop. He's got the tree over him. And in the time that this was written, that was kind of a typical way that a king would exercise his court. So the court would move around sometimes, and Saul's sitting under a tamarisk tree up on the hill. He's got his spear in his hand, and that's an image of royal authority. That is where Saul should be. He's supposed to be ruling. He's supposed to be ruling under God. And so far, this one, we've seen that Saul is doing the right thing. Now, his message then comes through that Saul has heard that David and his men had been discovered. So word has come back to them somehow. Somebody has found them and has passed the news on. And so Saul has heard where they are. It's slightly strange if you look at the next few verses that, you know, someone's told Saul they've been discovered, but apparently haven't told Saul where they are, or at least Saul isn't able to go and do anything about it himself. But he's heard that they are there. So verse 7, he said to them, "Listen, men of Benjamin, will the son of Jesse give all of you fields and vineyards? Will he make all of you commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds?" Now, so the people around him, it tells us verse 6 that Saul is on the hilltop with his officials around him. So the royal court is there, the chief whatever, and the chief of the treasury, and prime minister, and so on, are all around him. Notice in verse 7, he addresses them, "Listen, men of Benjamin." Now, Benjamin was Saul's tribe. So basically, he's given all the top jobs to his family and friends. So you'd think he's got people around him have come from the same family. He's put them in positions of authority and power. And so he ought to think they are on his side. He should be able to trust them because they're his own family. And he says to them, you know, we're going to see in the next few verses, Saul is getting increasingly paranoid about what's going on. He doesn't trust these people, even though they're the people he's appointed. They're his family and friends. He doesn't trust them. And he starts to accuse them of conspiracy and leading people away and not being, trying to undermine him. Verse 7, he says this, "Listen, men of Benjamin, will the son of Jesse give all of you fields and vineyards?" Now, an interesting echo there, going back to chapter 8. Now, in chapter 8 of 1 Samuel, that's where the people of Israel come to Samuel and say, "We want a king." And Samuel says, "You don't want a king. If you get a king..." Verse 14 in chapter 8 says this, Samuel said, "He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it all to his officials and attendants." So Samuel's already warned the people that when they get a king, the king will take the fields and vineyards and give them to his officials. And we can assume Saul has done that. But Saul is kind of saying to the people around him, "Do you think David's going to do that for you? Do you think if David supplants me as king, he will give you fields and vineyards?" There's no implication that they thought any of that. There's nothing in there that says any of those people were thinking about that. None of them are sort of plotting to get rid of Saul because they know David will reward them. But that's where Saul goes to. That's where Saul's mind goes to. He says, look, you're plotting against me because you think David will reward you. And we start to see Saul slipping down this treacherous slope. You know, verse 6, he was in the right place, doing the right thing with the right people. But we can see his mind is going the wrong way and he is losing faith. He should be focusing on serving the people, being the king under God's command. Instead, he is worrying about this imagined conspiracy against him. And just remember that David has done nothing overtly against Saul as yet. David has done everything he can to say, Saul is the Lord's anointed, and I will not harm him, I will serve him. And indeed, in a few chapters' time, we will see the situation where Saul's in a cave and David has the opportunity to kill him, but David doesn't kill him because David says, no, that's the Lord's anointed. So there's nothing coming from David to suggest any conspiracy or rebellion or anything undermine Saul. It's all in Saul's mind. So verse 8, is that why you have all conspired against me? No one tells me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse. None of you is concerned about me or tells me that my son has incited my servant to lie in wait for me as he does today. Well, Saul, maybe there's a reason why no one tells you, because it hasn't happened. It's in your mind, Saul. No one's telling you that the son Jonathan has incited his servant to lie in wait. Because it hasn't happened. Jonathan hasn't conspired with David, and David isn't lying in wait. David is trying to keep out of Saul's way at the moment. And there's this increasing paranoia in Saul's mind. That verse 8, that word conspiracy, why have you all conspired against him? It's a key word. And you will see that again in a couple more places in the rest of the passage. Saul is imagining this conspiracy. It's all in his mind, but as far as he is concerned, it's everybody else's fault. Everybody else is against him. Saul is believing his own lies. And he should be trusting his officials. He should be saying to his officials, you know, okay, what's going on? Tell me what's happening. Someone's come and said, we know where David is. Well, find out a bit more. What's David doing? What's his plan? What's he doing next? But no, Saul goes straight to he's coming to attack me. You're all conspiring against me. You're all against me. He should be trusting his officials, but instead he is finding fault. And there's a kind of a dissent here. So Saul is not trusting his officials. He's not trusting God. He is believing untruths. And I did put up a slide, which you skipped over. I stole one of Andy's slides from last week where Andy's headings were, God provides for me even in the middle of my messes. Second point was, God is still with me even when my sanity has flown away. Third point was, God surrounds me with faithful care even when others don't. And the fourth point Andy gave us last week was, God's guidance is better. And here's an example in Saul who's forgotten all those things. Saul should know that God provides for him. He's made him the king. He's given him everything he has, but he's forgetting that. Saul should know that God can be with us, God with him. And, you know, in Andy's note last week, he said, God is still with me, even when my sanity has flown away. And here we see Saul's sanity flying away, and he's lost track of the fact that he can still rely on God, or he should be able to rely on God. And Andy's third point is, God surrounds me with faithful care, even when others don't. Here, Saul is surrounded by his people, but yet he's not using that. He is seeing that as an attack, as conspiracy. And Andy's fourth point last week was, God's guidance is better. And here, Saul has not only dropped God's guidance, but he's dropped his official's guidance, and he's believing the untruths that are in his mind. And I guess, I don't know how you react to that. Do you react to that thinking, well, that's Saul, he's lost the plot? We wouldn't do that. But we do it all the time. Well, I do, I don't know anybody else. I mean, I'm not a king, I don't have officials, I don't have a court. But yet, all the time, I worry about what hasn't happened. I worry about what if, and what if that. And, you know, maybe, you know, we've got project meetings at work this week coming up. I think, well, what if we decide to do that, or we don't, if the directors want me to do that and not that, it's all going to go wrong, and oh, what are they going to sack me, and so on. None of that's true. It's all in my mind. And we can be just as Saul does. We are so easy to get spiraling down into things that are wrong. We might look at the future of the church and say, well, where's the church going? Oh, it might do this and I won't like that and it might do that. We shouldn't be imagining what's there. The Bible tells us, do not be anxious. Commit things to God, to Jesus. And what Saul is doing here is he's ignoring God from his equations, his thoughts and his planning. And as we'll see in due course over the next few chapters, he pays the price of that. Then verse 9, in comes Doeg the Edomite. Verse 9 says, but Doeg the Edomite, who was standing with Saul's officials, said, I saw the son of Jesse come to Ahimelech, son of Ahitub, at Nob. So who is Doeg? And if you look back to chapter 21, you will see that Doeg was there. So when David went to the priests of Nob, and Abithar, or the priests of Nob, and he was getting the bread and the servant, there's almost a kind of little footnote there that says, now, one of Saul's servants was there that day, detained before the Lord. He was Doeg the Edomite, Saul's chief shepherd. Now, it doesn't tell us quite what Doeg was doing there, and we can interpret the different commentators interpret that word, detained before the Lord, in different ways. But it doesn't matter. Doeg was there. He saw David. He saw Abiathar give him the bread and the sword. And he saw Abiathar inquire of the Lord using the ephod to find out God's will for David. So who is he? Is Doeg? Well, first of all, he is not an Israelite. He is not one of God's people. He's an outsider. He's a foreigner. He's come from Edom. And it's interesting that he is there and he's classified as Saul's chief shepherd. So he has some authority, and presumably that meant he was in charge of all the flocks and herds that Saul owned, and all the people all the other shepherds looked after those. Now, it's odd because Saul previously had been at war with the Edomites. And back in chapter 14, we read about how Saul attacked the Moabites and the Ammonites, and he attacked the Edomites. And it says, wherever he turned, he inflicted punishment on them. He fought valiantly and defeated the Amalekites, delivering Israel. So whether Doeg had been sort of initially captured as part of a raid and had risen in the ranks to do this job, or whether he had come across from Edom at some point, we don't know. But the problem is, he is not an Israelite. He is one of the enemy. And what we're going to see here in the next few verses is Saul not only is not listening to the people he should be listening to, his officials, the Benjamites, but he is now listening to Doeg, one of the Edomites. And as we read at the start of the service, we'll see how David talked about Doeg as being an evil man full of lies and deceit and trying to bring things down. But anyway, when David was at Nob, Doeg saw him, and now Doeg says to Saul, I saw the son of Jesse come to Ahimelech, in verse 10. Ahimelech inquired of the Lord for him. He also gave him provisions and the sword of Goliath the Philistine. So he's kind of telling tales, you know, maybe some of the other people knew this, but Saul doesn't need to know. And Doeg is saying, oh, he was there, and Ahimelech gave him the bread, and Ahimelech gave him the sword, and Ahimelech inquired of the Lord of him. As we'll see in a few moments, Ahimelech inquiring of the Lord is nothing unusual. It happened many times, and it was the right thing to do. David had gone there, and he'd gone there to try and seek God's guidance as to what he should do next. And I just, thinking about this, I just wondered, when did Saul last inquire of the Lord? And flick back through the chapters, and when did Saul inquire? He's forgotten that the Lord should be guiding him. He's forgotten to go to God and seek guidance. Probably, I think it's back in chapter 14, at the point when he should have been attacking the Edomites, there is an indication there that he asked Samuel and he asked the Lord what to do. But certainly nothing in the last seven chapters. So he's forgotten where he should get his guidance from. Instead of listening to God, he's listening to the voices in his head. He's listening to the lies he's telling himself. And again, we can so easily do that. We get into a trap where we're thinking about things. You know, our thoughts go around in our mind. Maybe just me. I can lie awake at night worrying about something that hasn't happened, and what I should be doing is going to God, going to Scripture, saying, God, give me peace. Show me what I need to do. Let me not worry about the things that aren't going to happen. So Doeg tells Saul that Ahimelech inquired of the Lord for David, and Saul's reaction, verse 11, he says, right, go and get Ahimelech. So the king sent for the priest Ahimelech, verse 11, son of Ahitub, and all the men of his family who were the priests at Nob, and they all came to the king. So Ahimelech, he brought Ahimelech and all the priests, other priests, the men of the family, and they all came to the king. And Saul said, listen now, son of Ahitub. Yes, my lord, he answered. Saul said to him, verse 13, why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, giving him bread and a sword and inquiring of God for him, so that he has rebelled against me and lies in wait for me as he does? So Saul has got this idea that David is conspiring against him, and Ahimelech is part of the conspiracy. Again, there's no evidence for this. Notice he doesn't say, Ahimelech, right, tell me what happened and why. But Saul goes straight in, you're conspiring against me. There's the accusation. You are conspiring with David. You gave him bread and a sword and you inquired of the Lord for him. So what's going on? And again, there's no evidence for this. He hasn't given Ahimelech the chance to explain what happened. And actually, there's nothing wrong with this. It's perfectly normal that David should go and ask for provisions from the priest, and it's perfectly normal and a good thing that David should ask the priest to inquire of the Lord. And yet, Saul is going, he just sees that as an act of rebellion and conspiracy against him. So Saul is worrying that. Saul is believing the untruths. He's probably being fed sort of juicy, ideas by Doeg, who is trying to stir things up. And Saul is believing that David is against him and David lies in wait. Now, we know David is not lying in wait to capture Saul, because again, let's say in a few chapters' time, we'll see the story in the cave where Saul went to lie down and David could have killed him easily, but didn't because Saul said no. So David said no, Saul is still the Lord's anointed. So we know David isn't conspiring. David isn't trying to attack Saul. David is trying to keep out of Saul's way, in fact. But yet Saul sees it as conspiracy. Verse 14. Ahimelech answered the king, who of all your servants is as loyal as David, the king's son-in-law, captain of your bodyguard and highly respected in your household? As far as Ahimelech knows, that's the case. David has this status. David is known to be faithful. David is known to serve the Lord God, to serve Saul. And Ahimelech is not afraid to speak the truth. Now, back in verse 6, it looked as though Saul's officials, the people around him, his court, were afraid to tell the truth. None of them said to Saul, but David is loyal. David is your captain of the bodyguard. David is highly respected. They probably know how Saul's going to take this. Ahimelech goes in, doesn't understand perhaps how Saul might react to that. David, and Ahimelech is saying that, it's fine. David is faithful. David is still your servant, and as far as he knows, and that's there. And verse 15, Ahimelech says, was this the first time I inquired of him? Of course not. Let not the king accuse your servant, for your servant knows nothing at all about this whole affair. And Ahimelech says, well, look, it's not the first time he's come to me for inquiry. I've done it loads of times, so it's been fine. And perhaps Saul should have been reminded here that what David was doing was the right thing. He should have been inquiring of God. And in Saul, instead of going down this sort of rabbit hole of conspiracy and attack, Saul should have been inquiring of God to say, what should I be doing? How should I be treating David? What is David really up to? But Saul has gone down, encouraged by Doeg and others, into this idea of conspiracy. And then we get to this almost shocking, well, is shocking, statement from Saul, verse 16. But the king said, you will surely die, Ahimelech, you and your whole family. So we had at the start that picture of Saul the king doing the right thing in the right place. He was up on the hill under the tree, had his spear to represent authority, and that should have been a good king, judging his people, guiding his people. But he's gone down off the rails, and here in verse 16, on zero grounds, Saul condemns the innocent Ahimelech and all of his family to die. Saul is not trusting anyone. Saul is not trusting God. Saul is believing falsehoods and he's lashing out at the innocent. And it's very easy for us to condemn Saul for this and think, oh, he's got it totally wrong. But if you think about it, we can so easily do the same things. And we can see that happening in others around us. I've worked in jobs where the leadership of the job, the leadership of the organization I work for was like this. They'd got us an idea in their mind on no basis. They didn't trust anybody. Their lies got bigger in their own head and they started to lash out at those around us. And innocent people got hurt. I've seen it in churches where somebody gets the wrong idea in their head, thinks people are against them, and they start to lash out. So we mustn't condemn Saul and say, I'd never do that, because people like you and I do that. And we must be careful of that. And we mustn't go the way Saul did, which is to forget to come before God, but instead rely on his own strength and his own abilities. Saul should have had Ahimelech, at this point, Saul should have had Ahimelech inquire of the Lord for him. But instead, he says, Ahimelech, you're going to die. Saul had every opportunity. He had the kingdom, he had the authority, he had what should have been wise advisors around him, he had the military strength of the army, but he's ignored God and he's thrown it away because he's relying on himself. Then the king, verse 17, ordered the guards at his side, turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because they too have sided with David. They knew he was fleeing, yet they did not tell me. And so Saul has ordered that Ahimelech will die, he's ordering that the priests will die. But the king's officials were unwilling to raise a hand to strike the priests of the Lord. Well, the Israelites around him, even though they are part of Saul's army, they are part of Saul's court, they can see this is wrong and they are not willing to strike the priests, because as far as they can see the truth that the priests are innocent, the priests have been serving God, and it is a wrong command to kill them. The official won't do it. But there's Doeg. And the king then ordered Doeg, you turn and strike down the priests. So Doeg the Edomite turned and struck them down. That day he killed 85 men who wore the linen ephod. And he also put to the sword Nob, the town of the priests, with its men and women, its children, infants, and its cattle, donkeys and sheep. Doeg completely wipes out the town of Nob, all the men and women, everything in it, in the way that Saul should have done when he attacked the Amalekites and when he attacked the Edomites. He should have wiped them out, but he didn't. He let one survive, let some survive, and now Doeg, maybe he's getting his revenge here. He is turned round and his Nob is being destroyed. The innocent town, the innocent families are killed because Saul's got the wrong idea, not listening to God, and Doeg is stirring that up. Little footnote at the end there, 20. But one son of Ahimelech, son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled to join David. He told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. Then David said to Abiathar, that day when Doeg the Edomite was there, I knew he would be sure to tell Saul, I am responsible for the death of your whole family. Now, we probably wouldn't regard David responsible for this, but he takes responsibility. So unlike Saul. Saul has got this weird idea they're out to get him, and he lashes out and people die because of his irrationality and his conspiracy theories. But David recognises what's happened and he blames himself for the fact that Doeg was able to tell Saul. And whether it would have been right to David to do anything to Doeg, I don't know, but David takes responsibility there. And David says, stay with me, don't be afraid. The man who wants to kill you, Saul, is trying to kill me too. You will be safe for me. And David provides comfort for Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, who is the priest. And David says, look, stay with us, stay with my group. We'll look after you, but you'll be safe here. And Abiathar was. We're going to hear about Abiathar later in quite a few chapters' time. Abiathar will reappear a long way down the line, but he is there and he's part of David's group. David takes responsibility for that. Now, I don't know about you, but imagine how David would feel. If I was in that situation, I'd gone off to I'd not found sanctuary at Gath, I'd run away, I'd been in a cave. I'm now hiding in the forest. Everyone's coming to me. David probably probably wanted a bit of sympathy and support and encouragement. He probably wanted people to help him, but yet people are coming to him who need him. David might say, I've been through a lot. I've run, you know, Saul down to kill me. I can't have everybody. You know, I need people to help me. Yet David is able to reach out and help others around and help Abiathar. So no matter how difficult it is for David, no matter how much he is worried by what Saul is doing, how much he is in fear for his life, he is reaching out and helping others and trying to show God's goodness. David, unlike Saul, is following God's will. And as we saw, David had inquired of the Lord to know what's happening. And I guess it wouldn't be surprising if Abiathar hadn't come to him as a priest, were then able to help him in the same way in guiding. And we see different contrasts between Saul and David. So Saul had the authority. He was the king. He sat on the hilltop. He had the authority. But he was paranoid. He was not trusting God, and he was lashing out to hurt other people. David had little status at this point. He was an outlaw. He was running away, trying to preserve his life. But yet David, where Saul was paranoid, David was confident. And where Saul was not trusting anybody, David is trusting God. Where Saul is lashing out to hurt others around him, David is reaching out to bring peace and sanctuary. And we see the difference between somebody who has forgotten God in their plan, somebody who is moving under their own steam and own power away from what God wants them to do, and David, who is moving in God's power and God's guidance and wants to serve God and glorify God in what he does. David reaches out, even in his time of difficulty and distress and hiding in the forest, he is able to reach out and help Abiathar and give him sanctuary. Let's turn back to Psalm 52, which in the headings in our Bibles will tell us this was a psalm of David, reads at the top, for the director of music, a maskil of David, when Doeg the Edomite had gone to Saul and told him, David has gone to the house of Ahimelech. So the first four verses, David is talking directly to Doeg the Edomite. Why do you boast of evil, you mighty hero? It's kind of sarcasm, you mighty hero. Why do you boast all day long, you who are a disgrace in the eyes of God? You practice deceit, your tongue plots destruction like a sharpened razor. You love evil rather than good, falsehood rather than speaking the truth. You love every harmful word, you deceitful tongue. And David is calling out Doeg. I guess they didn't actually come face to face, but he knows what Doeg has done. Abiathar has told him what Doeg has told the king. And David is calling out, you evil man, you are boasting. He's mocking him, you mighty hero, but you're a disgrace. You practice deceit, you plot destruction. And if I can circle back to the title we've got this evening says, even now many antichrists have come. There's kind of an image here of Doeg is the antichrist in this story. And the New Testament reminds us, not long back, we worked through 1 John. And 1 John reminds us that antichrists will come. We need to be careful as a church, as a fellowship, we need to be careful as individuals to seek God's will and not be pulled in the wrong direction by people who are telling us the wrong thing. This, David can be really clear here and saying, look, you're practicing deceit, your tongue's destruction, you love evil, you love harmful words. You are clearly not a man of God. You are clearly not teaching God's good work. Yet people will come into the church, into the fellowship, into our lives that will try to lead us astray. And if we're not focused on God in the way that Saul was not focused on God, it's so easy for these people, the antichrists, to spin us away, have us go after false doctrines that go round in our mind and lead us away from God. And David's psalm here says, those people are evil. They are not of God. They are a disgrace in the eyes of God. Verses 5, 6, and 7, which I didn't read at the start of the service, let's read them now. Talk about what David says will happen to these people. Verse 5, surely God will bring you down to everlasting ruin. He will snatch you up and pluck you from your tent. He will uproot you from the land of living. Read that verse again. Those are really strong, almost violent words. He will snatch you and pluck you. He will uproot you. David says, men will conspire against God and will conspire to lead us astray from God. But God will bring them down. He will snatch them up. He will pluck them from their tent, from their homes. He will uproot them. Verse 6, the righteous will see and fear. They will laugh at you, saying, here now is the man who did not make God his stronghold, but trusted in his great wealth and grew strong by destroying others. David gives us this psalm that promises that even when men attack us, even when men try to lead us astray, when the Antichrist come and they try and spread false ideas, false conspiracies that will lead us away from God, there's the promise here that God will deal with them in due course. And the righteous we will see and fear. They will laugh at them saying, here is the man who did not make God his stronghold. There's this reminder that those who are not serving God, not glorifying God, are not good for us. And we should be focused on that, focused on the right ideas, the right goodness. Verse 8, David talks about himself. But I am like an olive tree flourishing in the house of God. I trust in God's unfailing love forever and ever. For what you have done, I will always praise you. In the presence of your faithful people, and I will hope in your name, for your name is good. David describes himself as an olive tree. We had a tree at the start of the passage, now we've got a tree here. And an olive tree, particularly in sort of historical Middle East, a long tree, an olive tree is particularly valuable because they were very long-lived trees, they would bring forth fruit, they would provide shelter is the idea here. And David says, I'm not a deceitful man. I'm not leading people astray. I am trying to serve and glorify God, and I am like an olive tree. And that must be a prayer for ourselves, that we should remain rooted in God, serving God, steering away from false witness, from the evil, deceitful words, and that we would flourish like an olive tree, bearing fruit, giving shelter, serving God in all that we do. David says he's like an olive tree because, verse 8, I trust in God's unfailing love forever and ever. And that's where Saul had gone wrong. He was not trusting in God's love. He's not trusting in God's word. He didn't know, as David says in so many Psalms, God's unfailing love forever and ever. David was trusting in God and serving him. And David, as we will see in due course, became God's righteous king, not like Saul who turned away. Yeah, David got things wrong, but David served God through his life. And David says in verse 9, for what you have done, I will praise you. David says, I can see these deceitful men who are trying to harm me, these deceitful men who are trying to lead your people astray, and I can see what you will do to them. And for what you have done, for what you've done to those people, I will praise you. I will praise you in the presence of your faithful people, and I will hope in your name, for your name is good. And there's the challenge for us this evening. We need to watch that we are not like Saul, where we're led astray by ideas, by thoughts in our own mind that are not true. We're not led away by men, by evil men putting the wrong ideas in our mind, by the Antichrist trying to lead us away. But we remain rooted like David is on God's unfailing love. And we share amongst ourselves as a fellowship and amongst the world around us, we share God's love to each other. We recognize that like David, there will be trials and difficult times, but even in the hard times, as David said, we know we trust in God's unfailing love forever and ever. Because what has God done? David says, for what you have done, I will praise you in the presence of your faithful people. We need to be telling each other what God has done in our lives, how he has helped us, how he has led us forward, and we praise him for what he has done. And we pray that all that we do will be right, will be centered on God, and will glorify his name. Amen.